If I Had a Hammer by Charlaine Harris. If I had a hammer, I sang, as I used the measuring tape and a pencil to mark where I needed to drill. From the next room, Tara called, I'm going to leave if you're going to sing. I'm not that bad, I said with mock indignation. Oh, yes, you are. She was changing one of the twins in the next room. We've been friends forever. Tara's husband, J.B. Durone, was part of that friendship. We'd formed a little group of misfits at our high school in Bon Ton, Louisiana. What had saved us from utter outcastdom was that we each had a redeeming talent. I could play softball. Tara was a great manager, yearbook, softball team. And J.B. was incredibly handsome and could play football, given good and patient coaching. What put us on the fringes, you ask? I was telepathic. Tara's parents were embarrassing, abusive, poor, and public in their drunkenness, and J.B. was as dumb as a stump. Yet here we were, in our later 20s, reasonably happy human beings. J.B. and Tara had married and very recently produced twins. I had a good job and a life that was more exciting than I wanted it to be. J.B. and Tara had been surprised, amazed, when they had discovered they were going to be parents, and even more startled to find they were having twins. Many children had grown up in this little house. It was around 80 years old, but modern families want more space. Though cozy and comfortable for two, the house began to creak at the seams after Robbie and Sarah, Robert Thornton Durone and Sarah Sookie Durone, were born. But buying a larger place wasn't a possibility. That they owned this snug bungalow on Magnolia Street was something of a miracle. Tara had gotten the house years before when Tara's Tog started making some money. After careful consideration, she'd chosen the old Summerlin place, a bungalow built in the late 20s or early 30s. I'd always loved Magnolia Street, lined with houses from that same era, shaded by huge trees and enhanced with bright flower beds. Tara's one-floor house had two bedrooms, one large and one tiny, one bathroom, a kitchen, a living room, a dining room, and a sunroom. The sunroom, which faced the front of the house and lay through an arch to the right of the living room, was becoming the baby's room because it was actually much larger than the second bedroom. And the closet that served that bedroom backed onto the sunroom. After a summit meeting the week before, attended by me, my boss, Sam Merlot, and Tara's babysitter, Kiana Wong, Tara and JB had made a plan. With our help, they'd knock out the wall at the back of the little bedroom's closet, which was between that room and the sunroom. Then, we'd block in the closet from the bedroom side so the opening would be on the sunroom side. We'd frame that opening and hang louvered doors. The sunroom would become the new baby bedroom, and it would have a closet and shelves on the walls for storage. We'd paint the sunroom and the little bedroom, and the job would be done. Just a little home improvement project, but it would make a big difference. The very next day, Tara had gone to Sewrite in Shreveport to pick out material, and she'd begun making new curtains to cover the bank of windows that flooded the sunroom with light. Sam had agreed to perform the wall removal, but he was pretty anxious.
I know it can be done, he said, but I've never tried to do it.
J.B. and Tara had assured him they had the utmost faith in him, and with some tips from all-purpose handyman Terry Belfleur, Sam had assembled the tools he'd need. Tara, Kiana, the twins, and I had assembled in the sunroom to watch for the exciting moment when Sam cut through the old wall. We could hear a lot of cutting and sawing and general whamming going on, along with the occasional curse. J.B. was dragging the bits of drywall outside as Sam removed them. It was kind of exciting in a low-key way. Then I heard Sam say,
Huh, look at that, J.B.
What is that?
J.B. sounded surprised and taken aback.
This piece of board has been cut out and replaced.
Mumble, mumble, mumble. Electric wires?
No, shouldn't be. It's kind of an amateur, mumble, mumble. Here, I can open it. Let me slide this screwdriver in. Even from our side of the wall, I could hear the creak as Sam pried the panel out from between the studs. But then, there was silence. Unable to contain my curiosity, I left the sunroom and zoomed through the living room to round the wall into the current nursery. Sam was all the way in the closet, and J.B. was standing at his shoulder. Both were looking at whatever Sam had uncovered.
"It's a hammer," Sam said quietly.
"Can I see?" I said, and Sam turned and held the hammer out to me. I took it automatically, but I was sorry when I understood what I was holding. It was a hammer, all right, and it was covered with dark stains. Sam said,
"It smells like old blood." "This must be the hammer that killed Isaiah Wexler,"
J.B. said, as if that were the first thing that would pop into anyone's mind.
"Isaiah Wexler?"
Sam said. He hadn't grown up in bon ton like the rest of us. "Let's go sit in the living room, and I'll tell you about it," I said. The little room suddenly felt hostile and confined, and I wanted to leave it. The living room was pretty crowded with 5 adults and 2 babies. Tara was nursing Sarah, a shawl thrown discreetly across her shoulder. Kiana was holding baby Robbie, rocking him to keep him content until his turn came.
"Back in the early 30s, Jacob and Sarah Jane Wexler lived next door," Tara told Sam. "In the house Andy and Hallie Belfleur live in now. The Summerlins, Daisy and Hiram, built this house. The Wexlers had a son, Isaiah, who was about 15. The Summerlins had 2 sons, one a little older than Isaiah and one younger, I think, 13. You would have thought the boys would be friends, but for some reason, Isaiah, a big bull of a boy, got into a fight with the older Summerlin boy. His name was..." She paused, looking doubtful.
"Albert," I said. "Albert was a year older than Isaiah Wexler, a husky kid with red hair and freckles. Gran told me. Albert's little brother was Carter, and he was 13, I think. He was quiet, lots of curly red hair."
"Surely your grandmother didn't remember this,"
Sam said. He'd been doing math in his head. "No, she was too young when it all happened, but her mom knew both families. The fight and the estrangement caused a town scandal because the Wexlers and the Summerlins couldn't get Isaiah and Albert to shake hands and make up. The boys wouldn't tell anyone what the fight was about." Tara reached under the shawl to detach Sarah, extricated her, and began burping her. Sarah was a champion burper. I could feel the sadness in Tara's thoughts. I figured the old story was rousing memories of her contentious family. "Anyway," I said with energy, "the 2 Summerlin boys slept in the room in there." I pointed to the wall Sam had just breached. "The parents had the bigger bedroom, and there was a baby. They kept the baby in with them. In the house across the driveway, Isaiah Wexler slept in a bedroom whose window faced this house." I pointed to the sunroom's north window. "I think Andy and Hallie use it as a den now. One summer night, 2 weeks after the big fight between Isaiah and Albert, someone went through Isaiah's open window and killed him in his sleep. Beat him to death."
"Ugh."
Sam looked a little sick, and I knew he was thinking of the dark-stained hammer. Kiana's slanting dark eyes were squinted almost shut with distress, disgust, some unpleasant emotion. She left the room with Sarah to change her after handing Robbie to Tara. I said, "The poor Wexlers found him in the morning in the bed, all bloody, and they sent for the police. There was one policeman in Bontal then, and he came right away. Back then, that meant within an hour."
"You won't believe who the policeman was, Sam," Tara said. "It was a man named Fuller Compton, one of Bill's descendants."
I didn't want to start talking about Bill, who was an ex of mine. I hastened on with the sad story. "The Wexlers told Fuller Compton that the Summerlins had killed their son. What could Fuller do but go next door? Of course, the Summerlins denied it, said their son Albert had been sleeping and hadn't left the house. Fuller didn't see anything bloody, and Carter Summerlin told the policeman that his brother had been in the bed the whole night."
"No CSI, then,"
J.B. said wisely.
That's just sad, Kiana said, returning with Sarah, who was waving her arms in a sleepy way.
So, nothing happened? No one was arrested? Sam asked.
Well, I think Fuller arrested a vagrant and held him for a while in the jail, but there wasn't any evidence against him, and Fuller finally let him go. The Summerlins sent Carter out of town the next week to stay with relatives. He was so young. They must have wanted to protect him from the backlash. Albert Summerlin was regarded with lots of suspicion by the whole town, but there wasn't any evidence against him. And afterward, Albert never showed signs of a hot temper. He kept on going to church. People began speaking to Daisy and Hiram and Albert again. Albert never got into another fight. I shook my head. People were sure the Wexlers would move, but they said they weren't gonna. They were going to stay and be a reminder to the Summerlins every day of their lives.
Are there Wexlers still here in Bonneton? Sam asked.
Kathy Wexler's about 70, and she lives in a little house over close to Clarice,
J.B. said.
She's nice. She's the widow of the last Wexler.
What happened to Albert? Kiana asked. And the baby?
Not much, I said. The older Summerlins passed away. Carter decided not to come back. The baby died of scarlet fever. Albert married and had kids, raised them here in this house. Tara bought the house from Bucky Summerlin, right, Tara?
Yep,
she said. She was patting Robbie on the back now. Robbie was goggling around at everyone with that goofy baby look. Sarah was asleep in Kiana's arms, and I checked on the nanny automatically. Her thoughts were all about the baby, and I relaxed. Though I checked out Kiana thoroughly when Tara had told me she was thinking of hiring her, I still felt I didn't know her well. If J.B., Tara, and I had been considered odd ducks, Kiana had received a double whammy of misfit mojo. Her mother had been half Chinese, half African-American. Her dad, Coop Woods, had been all redneck. When Kiana was 16, they'd both been killed when their car stalled on the train tracks one night. Alcohol had been involved. There'd been rumors that Coop had planned a murder-suicide. Now, Kiana was 18, staying with whatever relative would have her. I felt sorry for her precarious situation. And I knew there was something different about the girl. I'd given Tara the green light to hire her, though, because whatever her quirk was, it was not malignant. Now, Sam said,
"You think we ought to call the police? After all, there's a detective right next door."
I noticed none of us hopped in to say, "Yes, that's the ticket." Sure, the hammer had stains, and Sam's nose was telling him the stains were old blood. Sure, the hammer had been concealed in the wall. Sure, a murder had taken place next door. But there might not be any connection.
Right.
I don't think we have to, Tara said, and J.B. nodded, relieved. It was their say as the homeowners, I figured. I looked at the hammer as it lay on an old newspaper on the coffee table. Hammers hadn't changed much over the decades. The handle was worn, and when I picked it up and turned it over, I saw that the writing on it read, "Firestone Supreme." With the dark stains on it, the tool looked remarkably ugly in the sunny room. It could never be just a tool again. Tara picked it up by folding the paper around it, and she carried it out of the room. Tara's action jogged us all into motion. We split in different directions to go to work. J.B. to the fitness club where he cleaned and trained, Sam and I to Merlot's bar, and Tara to check on her assistant, McKenna, who was running the store while Tara was on maternity leave. As I called goodbye, Kiana was putting the twins down for their nap on Tara and J.B.'s bed since the baby's room was full of dust. I forced myself to go to Tara's by 9 in the morning the next day. I had to fight a deep reluctance. For the first time, the pretty little house with its neat front yard seemed gloomy. Even the sky was overcast. I tapped on the front door, opened it, and called, "Woo, I'm here." Kiana was already at work folding laundry, but her full mouth was turned down in a sullen pout, and she only nodded when I spoke to her. J.B. was nowhere in sight. Of course, he could be at the fitness club already, but
Normally, he worked in the afternoon and evening. Tara, too, didn't show her face. Sam trailed in right on my heels, and we got mugs of coffee in the kitchen. Kiana didn't respond to our attempts at conversation, and she fixed a bottle for one of the twins in silence. Tara was having to supplement, apparently. JB emerged from the bedroom looking groggy. My old friend was usually the most cheerful guy around, but this morning he had circles under his eyes and looked 5 years older.
"Baby's cried all night," he said wearily. "I don't know what got into them. They're in the bed with Tara right now."
He downed his coffee in record time. Gradually, he began to perk up, and when we set our mugs in the sink, we all looked a little brighter. I began to worry. This was a funny kind of day, in an ominous way. Sam and JB went back into the little bedroom to finish cutting out the doorway. I climbed a folding stool to mount some brackets for shelving, which would be right above where the changing table would be placed. The tracks for the adjustable brackets were already up. I had learned how to use an electric drill to mount them, and I was justly proud of myself. I began counting holes on the track so the brackets would be even. "And there you have it. A solid brace," I said with some satisfaction. They were mounted too high for the twins to be tempted to climb on them when they got bigger. They were designed to hold things Tara would need when she was changing the babies, and on the higher shelves would be the knick-knacks people had given her, a china baby shoe with a plant in it, a cute picture frame with a photo of the twins, their baby books.
"Good job, Sook,"
Sam said behind me. I jumped, and he laughed.
"You were thinking too hard to hear me come through the new closet door," he said. "I tried to walk heavy."
"You are evil," I said, climbing down. "I don't think I'll work for you anymore."
"Don't tell me that," he said. "What would I do without you?"
I grinned at him. "I expect you'd find a way to carry on. This economy, there are plenty of women who need a job, even working for a slave driver like you." He snorted.
"You mean a pushover like me. Besides, you have your own financial interest in the bar now. Where are the shelves? I can hand them to you."
JB cut them yesterday, and he was going to paint them when he got in from work last night. Sam shrugged.
"Haven't seen him."
"Tara," I called. "You up yet?"
"Yeah,"
she called. I followed her voice to the current baby room. Tara was changing Robbie. She was smiling down at the baby, but she looked haggard.
"He wants to know where his sis is,"
Tara said, freely interpreting Robbie's googly stare. "I think JB's got Sarah." "I'll track him down," I offered. I stepped into the kitchen where Kiana was at the stove cooking, spaghetti sauce from the smell. "You seen JB and Sarah?" I asked. She was thinking that she didn't like the idea that someone could read her thoughts. I could hardly blame her for that. I didn't like the fact that I could either. I sensed more strongly than ever that there was something different about Kiana, something that chimed in with my own peculiarity. It wasn't the time to tax her with it, though.
"They went outside," she murmured,
her bony little figure hunched over the stove like a junior witch's. I crossed behind her to go out the back door. "JB?" At first glance, the fenced-in yard with its minute patio and lone water oak looked empty. The shelf boards were there, and they were painted, which I was glad to see. But where was JB? And more important, where was baby Sarah?
"JB!"
I called again. "Where are you?" Maybe because of the high fence, there was not a bit of breeze in the backyard. The lawn furniture sat dusty and baking on the bricks. It was hot enough to make my skin prickle. I closed my eyes and took a deep breath, inhaling the sense of town. Asphalt, cooking, vehicles, dogs. I searched for a living brain in the area, and had just found two when a subdued voice said,
"Here."
I circled the water oak to the west corner of the yard to find JB sitting on the ground. I closed my eyes in relief when I saw that he was holding Sarah, who was making those cute little baby noises and waving her arms. "What's the matter?" I asked, trying to sound gentle and relaxed. JB had let his hair grow, and he pulled it back with a ponytail holder. If you had to compare him to a movie star, yes, he was that handsome. He was pretty much in the fair-haired Jason Lewis mold, physically.
There's something angry and sad in the house, he said,
sounding way more serious and troubled than I'd ever heard him.
When we opened the wall and touched the hammer, it got out.
If I hadn't had such a strange life, I might have laughed. I might have tried to convince J.B. it was his imagination. But my friend was anything but imaginative, and he'd never shown a taste for the dark side before. J.B. had always been sunny, optimistic, and generally along for the ride. So, when did you notice this? I said. Sam had approached us quietly. Now he knelt by J.B. With a finger, he stroked the line of Sarah's plump little cheek.
I noticed it last night, J.B. said. It was walking around the house. Did Tara see it too?
Sam asked. He didn't look directly at J.B. The sun set his strawberry blonde hair on fire as he knelt in the yard.
No, she didn't.
J.B. shook his head.
But I know it's there. Don't tell me I'm making it up or that I'm dreaming or something. That's bullshit.
I believe you, I said.
I believe you too, Sam said. Good,
J.B. said, looking down at his daughter.
Then let's find out how to get rid of it.
Who am I going to call for that? I wondered out loud.
Ghostbusters,
Sam said automatically. Then he looked embarrassed.
Me,
said a new voice, and we all rotated to look at Kiana. She still had the spoon in her hand, and it was dripping red. There was what you might call a significant pause.
I know, Steph,
she said, sounding pretty unhappy about it.
I get pictures in my head.
The pause extended to an uncomfortable length. I had to say something. She was already full of regret at revealing herself, and I could see that, clearly anyway. How long have you been a psychic? I asked, which was like saying, do you come here often? But I was clean out of ideas.
Since I was little, she said. But with my parents, you know, I knew not to say anything after the first time. They got spooked.
That was probably an understatement, and I could completely sympathize with Kiana. I'd had the same problem. Having a little girl living with you who could read your mind had been tough on both my mother and father, and consequently tough on me. How does it happen? I said, since Sam and J.B. were still floundering through their thoughts. I mean, do you get clear pictures? What triggers them? She shrugged, but I could tell she was relieved that I was taking her seriously.
It's touch, mostly. I mean, I don't have visions when I'm driving or anything like that.
That's so interesting, I said, and I was totally sincere. It was kind of neat to know someone else who was completely human but also wasn't normal. She felt the same way.
So, when you touch the babies,
J.B. said abruptly,
what do you see?
They're little, Kiana said, with surprising gentleness. I ain't gonna see nothing with them this little.
Since that wasn't true, I had to applaud her for keeping her mouth shut, and I was grateful that she didn't spell out whatever she had seen in her own head, that I didn't have to see it with her. If anything was worse than reading people's minds, it would be knowing their future, especially when there wasn't anything you could do about it. Can you... You can't change anything, I asked, when you see something that's going to happen?
I cannot, she said, with absolute finality. I don't have a bit of responsibility, but people make decisions and that can change what I've seen.
Kiana's golden skin flushed as we all stared at her.
Right now,
said Sam, getting from the bigger picture to the smaller,
do you think you can help us with the problems in this house?
Kiana looked down.
I don't know how, but I'm going to try, she said. When I figure out what to do.
She looked at each of us questioningly. None of us had a helpful idea, at least not at the moment. I said,
I'm hoping that the funny feeling in the house will sort of wear away myself. Sam opened the wall, we found the hammer, so we know Albert did kill Isaiah. Surely that should set it all to rest. JB said,
Is that the way it works?
He didn't seem to have a doubt in the world that I would know the answer. Friend, I don't know, I said. If it doesn't work that way, maybe we should call the Catholic priest. One came to Bonton's little church from a nearby town.
But this isn't a demon that needs to be exorcised,
Kiana said, outraged.
It's not a devil. It's just real unhappy.
It has to go be unhappy somewhere else,
JB said.
This is our house. These are our babies. They can't go on crying all the time.
As if he'd pressed a cue button, we could hear Robbie start to wail in the house. We all sighed simultaneously, which would have been funny if we'd had a clue what to do. But further conversation didn't trigger any plan, so we figured we might as well go back to the job that had brought us there. Sam and I picked up the painted shelves and went inside to put them up. Kiana followed, and she returned to the stove to stir the spaghetti sauce, her face tense with distress, her brain concentrating on fighting the unhappiness that flowed through the house like invisible water. Sam brought in the paint. While I painted the door frame, the men put up the drywall to close up where the old closet door had been. Once that was done, Sam very carefully painted the new wall on the old baby's room side while I painted the interior of the closet from the new baby's room side. It was odd to hear his brushstrokes just a few millimeters away from mine. We were working on the same thing, but invisible to each other. It didn't take long to finish my task. JB planned to put up two hanger rods for the twins' tiny clothes and shelving above them, but he'd left a few minutes before to run errands before going to work. JB had been moving slowly. When he'd gotten into his car, he'd sat for a moment, his head resting on the steering wheel. But before he'd reached the corner, he was smiling, and I felt my shoulders relax with relief. After cleaning his brushes and drop cloths, Sam left for Malotte's. It was my day off, and I needed to take care of some bills. I could hardly wait to get out of the house. I offered to take Tara with me while I drove around town, and to my surprise, she agreed to go. She sat quietly in the car the whole time, and I couldn't tell if she was depressed or exhausted, or maybe both. She grew more talkative the longer we were away.
"We can't leave our house," she said. "I can't afford to buy another one, and we can't live with JB's folks. Besides, no one would buy it unless we can make it a regular home again."
Since I hadn't been in the house as long as Tara, I recovered my spirits more quickly.
"Maybe we're just being silly, Tara. Maybe we're making a mountain out of a molehill."
"Or a haunting out of a hammer," she said, and we both managed to laugh. We returned to eat Kiana's spaghetti and garlic bread in a much more grounded frame of mind. I can't tell you how cheered I was by our little excursion, or how bleak I felt after we'd been back in the house only 10 minutes. The exhausted baby slept for a while, and lunch was at least tolerable. But always at the back of our conversation was the feeling that any moment one of us would burst into tears. There wasn't a mind I could read to get any information on what was happening in this house. There wasn't an action I could take, a deed I could perform, that could help. I had a few friends who were witches, but Amelia Broadway, the only one I trusted, was in Europe for a month. I felt oddly stymied. Later that evening, we met back in the living room, even Sam and JB. No one had arranged it. It was like we were all drawn back to the house by whatever unhappy thing we'd disturbed. Tara had slip-covered the love seat and couch recently, and she'd hung some pretty pictures of the Thomas Kincaid School, lots of cute little cottages with flowers or lofty trees with the sun grazing the tops. This was the kind of house Tara wanted, peaceful, bright, happy. The house on Magnolia Street was not like that any longer. Tara was holding Sarah and JB was holding Robbie. Both babies were fussy. Again. Still, which upped the tension in the room. Tara, uncharacteristically, had decided to turn away from reality. She was blaming JB for the misery in the house. "He watches ghost hunters too often," she said, for maybe the 10th time. "I've lived here for 4 years, and I've never felt a thing wrong." Tara, there's something wrong now, I said, as quietly as I could.
You know there is. Kiana knows there is. We all know there is.
Oh, for God's sake, Tara said impatiently, and she jiggled Sarah so hard that Sarah started crying. Tara looked shocked, and for a moment I read her impulse to hand Sarah to someone else. Anyone. Instead, she took a deep breath and rocked Sarah with exaggerated gentleness. She was terrified of turning into her mother. I think that says it all about Mama Thornton. Kiana stood, and there was something desperately brave about the way she went into the sunroom and approached the closet. Her thick black hair pulled back in a band, her thin shoulders squared, her golden face determined. With great courage, Kiana stepped into the space where the hammer had been stowed for so long. I rose hastily, covering the few steps without a thought. I stood outside the closet, looking in. Kiana turned a muddy white, and her eyes rolled up. I sort of expected her to fall to the floor and convulse, but she stayed on her feet. Her small hands shot out in my direction. Without thinking, I grabbed them. They were freezing cold. I felt a charge of stinging electricity passing from her to me, and I made my own little shocked noise. Sookie? Sam was just about to put his hand on my shoulder when I stopped him with a sharp shake of my head. I could just see us forming a chain of shaking, grunting victims of whatever had entered Kiana Wong. I could see a shape in her brain. Something that wasn't Kiana. Someone else inhabited her for a few awful seconds. And then it was over. I had my arms around Kiana and her head on my shoulder. I was patting her a little desperately, saying, "Hey, you okay? You need to go to the hospital?" Kiana straightened, shaking her head as if she had cobwebs caught in her hair. She said, "Step back so I can get out of this fucking closet." I did so very promptly.
"What happened?"
Sam said. The hairs on his arms were standing on end. Kiana was understandably freaked, but she was also excited. Her skin glowed with it. I've never seen her look so lively. The babies were as quiet and big-eyed as fawns when a predator is near. JB looked scared and Tara looked angry, both pretty typical reactions. By an exchange of half-finished sentences, we agreed to adjourn to the backyard. Though it was hot, the heat was better than whatever had been in the closet. Tara brought all of us sweating cans of soda from the refrigerator, and we sat in the darkness, the area lit only by the light coming from the house windows. I wondered what the neighbors would think of our silent, somber party if they could see over Tara's fence.
"So, what was it?"
I asked Kiana when she looked a little more collected.
"It was a ghost," she said promptly.
"So it must have been the boy, Isaiah," I said, "since he was the murder victim. But why would his ghost be in this house? He was killed next door, right? Andy and Hallie haven't had any problems because Andy would have told me." On purpose or by accident, Andy was a clear broadcaster. "There weren't any bones or anything," Tara objected. "Just the hammer." Kiana leaned over to take one of the twins from Tara, and Tara hesitated before letting Kiana take the baby. I could feel Kiana's sadness, but she didn't blame Tara.
"Shouldn't there be remains of a body if there's a ghost here?"
"Ghosts don't have to be where their physical remains are laid," Kiana said, her voice weary. "They're stuck where the emotion grabbed them up."
"Huh?" Tara said.
"It's the strong emotion that imprints them on the place,"
Kiana told us.
"It's the trauma."
Now that she decided to tell us she was a psychic, Kiana was just full of information.
"What kind of trauma?"
JB said.
"Usually the death trauma,"
Kiana said a little impatiently.
"If a person dies real scared, real angry, he leaves his imprint on the space where that emotion took over. Or sometimes the person gets fixed on an object that played a part in the traumatic event, like a bloody hammer. And after he dies, that's where his ghost manifests. In this case, the hammer and the closet are the objects."
"Huh,"
Sam said. He didn't sound like he was automatically signing up for the Ghost Hunters Club, but he didn't sound skeptical either. More like he was chewing these new ideas over. That was kind of the way I felt. My world had not included this before now. So you're saying he, is it a guy, could be buried anywhere?
In the movies, when you find the bones, the ghost is laid,
J.B. said unexpectedly. The murder victim was Isaiah Wexler, and his headstone is out in the cemetery by my house, I said.
But someone's not resting easy,
J.B. said, sounding just as reasonable.
You know that, Sookie.
Suddenly, I felt tired and depressed, more depressed than I'd ever been in my life. And that just wasn't me. I'm not saying I'm Pollyanna, but this sudden misery simply wasn't my normal style. Sam, I said, do you think you could change to your bloodhound form and maybe go over the yard? If there was a burial that had to do with the murder, it would be really old and hard to scent. I shrugged. But it's worth a try. This is real life, Tara said. Not exactly as if she were angry, but simply protesting that none of this should be happening. Real life? I almost laughed. Experiencing a ghost secondhand and looking for a corpse weren't what I wanted from my real life. On the other hand, worse things had happened to me.
All right, Sam said grudgingly. But not tonight. It's nowhere near the full moon, so it won't be as easy to change. I need a full night's sleep first. I wouldn't do this for anyone but her,
Sam thought, feeling ashamed that he was dragging his feet. I could only be grateful I had such a friend. The next day, I was at Tara's house by mid-afternoon. Sam pulled up just as I got out of my car. I was startled to see JB and Tara on their way out, in workout clothes.
I got called in to substitute for another trainer,
JB explained. I looked at Tara, my eyebrows raised. She said, I have to get the hell out of this house. Kiana just got here. She's in charge of the twins. In truth, Tara looked awful, and JB not much better. I nodded. We'll keep on with the plan, then, I said. And they were out the door before I could say goodbye. When Sam and I went in the kitchen, Kiana was bathing Robbie while Sarah sat in her infant seat. The babysitter looked determined to do her job. Robbie was whimpering, and I picked up Sarah from her infant seat and patted her back, hoping she'd stay quiet. But she didn't. She began to cry. It looked as if Kiana needed some help for a while. Since there wasn't a third baby for Sam to hold, he went to work on the hardware for the new closet doors. I walked Sarah around the house, trying to make her happier, and when I went through the sunroom, I helped by handing Sam whatever he needed. Sometimes being a telepath can be handy.
Do you feel as lousy as I do?
He asked, as both babies escalated to full DEFCON 5. I chickened out and put Sarah in her infant seat in the kitchen while Kiana dressed Robbie. At least that lousy, I said.
I wonder if hauntings are all like this.
I hope I never experience another one to find out, I said. I dropped my voice to a whisper. I wonder if any of this would have happened if Kiana hadn't been here. If a psychic hadn't been around, would we have had the same experience? Would the hammer have been a haunted hammer, or just a bloody hammer? Sam shrugged and laid down his tools.
Who knows?
He took a deep breath.
Come on. If I'm going to turn, I want to get it over with. Kennedy is watching the bar, but I want to get back sooner rather than later.
The atmosphere of the house was having its way with Sam. I followed him through the house. Kiana watched us pass through the kitchen, her face dark with unhappiness, her eyes shadowed. The babies had finally gotten quiet in their infant seats, watching their nanny clean up from the bathing ordeal. I looked into her brain to be sure that Kiana was herself and that she was alert. Robbie and Sarah were safe. Though I'd seen Sam change before, I could never get jaded about watching a human turn into an animal. I'd overheard some college kids in the bar talking about the physics of shape-shifting, and they'd seem to think that the transformation was impossible. So much for their impossibilities. It was happening before me, a full-sized man changed into a bloodhound. Sam liked to turn into dogs because humans weren't as likely to shoot him by mistake. As a true shapeshifter, he had an advantage over were-animals, who had to transform to one thing. Werewolf, of course, or were-tiger, were-wombat, whatever their genetic makeup was. Sam enjoyed the variety. Sam, who normally had a smooth and swift transition, was panting on the ground when I got a scare.
"Smooth move,"
Kiana said from right behind me. I jumped about a mile.
"I wish I could do that,"
she added. "Hell in a handbasket, Kiana. Why didn't you say something?"
"I was making plenty of noise," she said casually. "You're just too interested in watching."
I opened the back door and threw Sam's clothes on one of the dinette chairs. "Aren't you supposed to be with the twins?" She unclipped a device from the waistband of her shorts.
"I got the monitor right here. They're both asleep in their cribs. Finally."
Sam rolled to his feet and ambled over to me. I never knew exactly how much he understood human speech while he was in animal form, but he was looking at the house, and his chest was rumbling. "I'm going to check on them," I said. If that sounded distrustful, I didn't care. The atmosphere in the house seemed somewhat easier, more peaceful. I wondered if the bad influence was wearing away, or was it because we three were out in the yard? That was a disturbing idea. I made myself put it aside, and I looked at the sleeping Robbie, hardly daring to breathe loud. The baby seemed perfectly all right. So did Sarah, in her own crib. I put my hand gently on Sarah's back. The inchoate dreams of an infant flowed into my head. I thought of putting both of them in the stroller and taking them with me into the backyard, but the house was so pleasant and cool, and it was so hot outside. We had the monitor. I walked back to the yard. Sam was scouting around, examining the space with his nose. His floppy ears were hanging forward. I'd read that this pushed the scent up to a bloodhound's nose. Amazing. I personally thought he was very cute as a bloodhound, but that got into kind of queasy territory, so it was a thought I had to banish.
"He's working hard," Kiana remarked.
She perched on the edge of one of the yard chairs, her hands tucked between her bare knees. Her thick, dark hair was twisted and secured on top of her head with a clip or two because it was too hot for long hair. My own was piled up in much the same way.
"You two have been friends a long time," she said when I didn't respond to her last comment.
"Yes," I said. "A few years now."
"You have a lot of friends."
"I have a lot of friendly acquaintances. It's hard to have close friends when you have a mental thing like mine."
"Tell me about it."
Kiana shuddered delicately. Frankly, I didn't know if I wanted to be Kiana's friend or not. There was something in her that put me off. I realized this was pretty damn ironic, since that was the way people often felt about me. But I didn't think Kiana made me uneasy simply because she had an unusual ability. She made me anxious because, for a few minutes the day before, she hadn't been alone in her skin. Someone else had been there with her. I turned my eyes away from the girl. I didn't want her wondering what I was thinking about. I watched Sam instead. He was sniffing the ground with the efficiency of a vacuum cleaner. The lot was long and narrow, with the house leaving very little room on either side. On the north side of the house, there were maybe 5 feet between the air conditioner sticking out of the kitchen window and the fence that surrounded the yard from the front wall of the house to the rear property line. Naturally, it was in that narrow strip that Sam found a promising scent. He went over it anxiously, and then he raised his head and bayed. I hoped all the neighbors really were at work. At least the fence blocked the view. Sam's doleful bloodhound face swung toward me, and he pawed at the ground at his feet. He said. I got the shovel from the tool shed. This was not going to be pretty. I was trickling with sweat after the first few shovelfuls, and I was maybe a little peeved that Kiana didn't ask to take a turn digging. She looked down into the gradually increasing hole with an unnerving and unswerving fascination. I looked at Sam, who was licking one of his paws. "You better go inside and change back," I said. "Thanks, Sam." He started ambling toward the steps and paused, stymied. I pitched a shovelful of dirt at Kiana's feet. "Kiana," I said sharply, "you need to open the back door for him." It was like I'd stuck a pin in her, she looked so startled.
"Sure," she said. "Sure, I'll do it."
I watched her go over to the door, and it seemed to me she stumbled a little, was a bit shaky on her feet. Her mind was blurry, foggy, with strong impressions coming from God knows where. After Sam was in the house, I resumed digging. The faster I went, the sooner we'd know if Sam had found an old turkey carcass or human remains. After another 5 minutes, I had to pause. Kiana had returned to her place at the edge of the hole. Her stance was rigid, and her eyes were fixed on the upturned earth. I heard a couple of slamming car doors. JB and Tara had returned. I felt a surprising amount of relief. I was leaning on my shovel when they all came into the backyard. All the adults, that is. The twins were still sleeping. Sam had resumed his human form, and he was in his cut-off jeans again. His Hawaiian shirt looked cool, with its loose drape around his torso. I envied him. My tank top felt wet and clingy. JB and Tara were still wearing their workout clothes, so they were as sweaty as I was, but they both looked more relaxed. "So? There's something in there?" Tara asked, peering down at the hole I'd made. "Sam thinks so," I replied. "JB, you want a shovel for a while?"
"Sure, Sook," he said amiably, and he grabbed the shovel.
I sank to my haunches and watched him work. Sam squatted by me. He never wavered in his expectant posture. And, with a terrible predictability, the shovel hit something that scraped instead of crunched. Without being told, JB started to scratch at the dirt with the shovel blade instead of sinking it in. We didn't need the monitor to hear the babies begin to wail. Kiana tore herself away to go into them. Tara seemed relieved to leave it to her. JB uncovered a femur. We regarded the bone in silence.
"Well, we got us a body," Sam said. "Now we need to know who it belonged to."
"How are we going to explain what we were doing?" Tara asked. "We could say you were going to plant some beans," I said. "I know it's late for beans, but a cop would believe that." I left unspoken the fact that Andy would believe that if we said it was JB's idea. "We can say we were digging the holes for the runner poles."
"So, they'll come get the bones out, and then what? Will things get better in our house?"
Tara's eyes were bright with anger.
"Will we stop being miserable? What about the babies? I think we have to find out who this guy was."
"It's not Isaiah Wexler. And we know Albert lived, and we know Carter was sent away after the murder. So who could this be?" I looked around, hoping someone would look as though he had had a revelation, but everyone looked blank. JB, shovel in hand, was standing by the crouching Sam. They were silently regarding the hole that was a grave. Sam was scowling. "Tara, we can't ignore this," I said as gently as I could. I was fighting a rising wave of irritation.
"I know that," she snapped. "I never said we could, Sookie. But I got to figure out what's best for me and my family."
Kiana had been gone a handful of minutes by now. I could still hear the babies crying. Why hadn't she found out what was wrong and fixed it? The normally placid JB nudged Sam to make him move away from the grave. Sam's jaw set in a way I knew meant he was barely holding on to his temper. I didn't trust any emotion I felt. Tara was angry with me, which wasn't normal. Sam and JB were glaring at each other. The anger in the air was affecting all of us. I made myself run into the house to find out why the babies were weeping. Tara should be doing this. I followed the sobs to their little room. Kiana was sitting in the rocking chair, crammed in beside the cribs, and she was crying too.
"Oh, for God's sake," I said, "snap out of it."
Her tear-stained face looked at me with resentment written all over it.
I have a right to grieve for what I've lost. Only my brother knows the real me,
she said bitterly. Uh-oh. Kiana, I said, suddenly feeling a lot calmer and a lot more nervous. You don't have a brother.
Of course I do.
But she looked confused. You're being haunted, I said, trying to sound matter-of-fact. I didn't want to say the word possessed, but it was definitely hovering in the air.
Sure, that's right. Blame me because I'm the one who's different.
She snarled in a complete emotional about-face. I flinched, but I had to pass her to get to the babies whose cries had redoubled. I decided to take a chance. You want to go outside? I said. Then I made a guess. You can see your bones. I watched her carefully, since I had no idea what she'd do next. There was someone else behind Kiana's face, someone both anguished and angry. All I could think about was getting her out of the room. And then Kiana got up and left the room, her face blank. She wasn't even walking like herself. I scooped up Sarah, who was shrieking like a banshee. Sarah, I said, please stop crying. To my amazement, she did. The baby looked up at me, her face red and tearful, panting with exhaustion. Let's get your brother, I said, since Robbie's wails continued unabated. We'll make him happy, too. Robbie also responded to my touch, and in a moment I was walking slowly, holding the two babies. It was awkward and terrifying. What would have happened if Kiana had been utterly overrun by the ghost while she was here alone with the twins? Now that the bones had been uncovered, the emotional miasma in the house was intensifying, without any doubt. It was a struggle to get out of the house, aside from the difficulty of carrying two children. Though I wanted to leave more than anything, I stopped in the kitchen to put them in their child seats. I opened the back door and passed Sarah to JB. I went down the back steps with Robbie, moving very carefully. Sam, Tara, and Kiana were in the corner of the yard farthest from the bones, and JB and I joined them there. In sharp contrast to the light-hearted meeting we'd had when we were planning the renovation, our conference in the backyard was grim. The late afternoon sun slanted across the bricks of the patio, and the heat of them radiated upward. Even the heat was preferable to the haunted house. We waited. Nothing happened. Finally, Tara sat in a lawn chair and started feeding Sarah after JB fetched her nursing shawl. Robbie made squeaky noises until it was his turn. They, at least, were content. Sam said,
I dug some more, and I think it's a complete skeleton. We don't know whose bones, whose ghost, or why it's angry.
An accurate and depressing summary. The only neat stories are the ones made up, Tara said. Kiana, who seemed to be herself at the moment, sat slumped forward, her elbows on her knees. She said,
There's a reason all of this is happening. There's a reason the haunting started when the hammer came out of the wall. There's a reason there's a body buried in the backyard. We just have to figure it out. And I'm the psychic, and it's trying to live through me, so I got to try to take care of this.
I looked at Kiana with some respect. What she was saying made sense.
It's tied to the hammer, Kiana said.
So, okay, if we want to know what happened so we can fix it, I said, and since I can read minds and since the ghost can get into Kiana's mind, I'm wondering if maybe Kiana and I can do something with the bones and find out who the spirit, the ghost, is. Kiana nodded.
Let's do it, she said. Let's get this bitch settled.
She reached over to the old patio table and took the hammer. We stood, full of purpose. JB and Sam shot out of their chairs. Sam said,
You don't need to do this, Sookie.
Wild horses couldn't have held me back from this experience. I stepped away from Sam and took Kiana's left hand, bony and strong and cold. We went over to the excavated skeleton. Its skull gaped up at us from its grave. Kiana was holding the hammer in her free hand. Then she gasped and jerked, and suddenly I was holding the hand of someone completely different. And I was seeing what Kiana saw, but not through Kiana's eyes. I was seeing faces. A round-faced woman working over a kitchen table. I recognized what she was doing. She was making a pie crust. She was looking up, bewildered and sad. Mama? A burly man bending over something on a tool bench with the same air of worry about him. Father. And looking at a boy, older than me, but still a boy, with an open, honest, freckled face, a face that was serious and full of doubt. Albert. I would have done anything to remove the anxiety from their faces. Anything to silence the cruel words that had caused that unhappiness. Words spoken by that devil, Isaiah Wexler. Part of me could still be only Sookie, and that part felt the growing resolution, the horrible resolve, as the entity in Kiana played out his plan. The night, the darkness, only streetlights in the distance where town lay. That almost threw me out of Kiana's mind, since when had Magnolia Street been out of town? Running silently across a short distance between the windows, from my window to his, and his was open in the warm night. Threw it quietly enough not to wake him, father's hammer in my hand, and then he raised his hand. Oh, no. In the moonlight, the blood looked black. Back out the window, breathing hard, and over to the one in my house. Safe now. Back home. Hide the hammer under the bed. But Albert woke up. Albert. Beloved brother. And Albert said, "What did you do?" And I said, "I shut his foul mouth." And there was more, but it was too much for me, Sookie. I had to pull Kiana out of this, but that was impossible until we saw the end. Then we did. We saw the end. I gasped and choked, and Kiana folded silently to the dirt as if her strings had been cut. Sam caught me, braced me, as J.B. supported Kiana. J.B. said, "What happened? Why were y'all holding hands, Sookie?" Tara said, "They'll tell us, honey. Wait a minute." The twins were silent, and when I could see, I realized they were back in their infant seats at the base of the tree. The evening was closing in. The shadows had gotten so long they almost covered the yard. I could hear a car door closing next door. Andy had gotten home. Should I call out? Get him to come look?
"Do you know who it is?"
Sam asked, keeping his voice low, pointing at the open grave. I went over to it. "This boy killed Isaiah Wexler. This boy is Carter Summerlin."
"But you said his folks sent him away," Sam said.
"In a way, they did,"
Kiana said weakly. Tara had propped her up against the fence and was giving her a bottle of water. Kiana looked as if she'd survived a death march.
"This boy killed himself because he couldn't stand what he did. He climbed through the window at night, the window of the house next door, with the hammer he took from his dad's toolbox. Came back in his own bedroom window, blood all over."
I shuddered. The others stared at us, their mouths open.
"But his big brother saw. Is that right, Sookie?"
Kiana asked. I nodded.
"Albert took Carter's nightshirt and burned it in the backyard in the middle of the night and hid the hammer in the closet wall. Later on, he closed it in. The fight he'd had with the Wexler boy, it was because, well, Isaiah had made fun of what he thought was the effeminate ways of Albert's little brother. And to Carter, it was so terrible, so unthinkable a slur that he had to wipe out the one who'd voiced it. Albert believed he should have protected Carter better. He thought he should have shown Carter how to behave in a more manly way.
But I felt terrible about killing Isaiah, and about how people thought Albert was to blame. The next week, I killed myself,"
Kiana said. She was unaware she was saying anything odd.
"I hanged myself in that same closet from a hook." I figured that would make things better for Albert. When they found me, Albert started crying. He told them what the fight had been about and how he'd helped cover up for me. They had one son dead, so to protect Albert and the family's good name, my folks buried me in the yard in the dead of night and told everyone they'd sent me off to live with relatives.
And Carter haunted them? I said, not liking how shaky my voice was.
He haunted his parents because they were ashamed of him,
Kiana said, and I welcomed her return to perspective with huge relief.
But not Albert. Albert had tried to keep faith with Carter, but he must have felt terribly guilty himself every time he saw the Wexlers.
So Carter started making his presence known again now because
of the hammer. When you found the hammer, that was the trigger for his activation.
Kiana shrugged.
I don't know much about ghosts, but I got that from him. He was full of anger. Well, we all got that. He was confused and agitated.
What can we do? To get rid of him. He can't stay here,
JB said, his mouth set in an uncharacteristically hard line. We can call the police, I said. They'd come get the bones and take them away for evaluation and burial. They'll take the hammer, too. The closet has been reconfigured, so it's no longer the place where Carter died. I wondered if we sent the bones and the hammer to the police, would the ghost manifest at the police station? I tried to imagine Detective Andy Belfleur's face.
Will that do it? And his presence? Tara asked.
Ought to.
Kiana looked at me. I shrugged.
Maybe.
There was a doubtful silence. I cleared my throat. Or we could just take everything, bones and hammer, and bury the whole kit and caboodle in the cemetery. By ourselves. And no one would ever need to know, which was what the whole Summerlin family wanted. They all thought about my proposition for a few seconds.
I'm for that, JB said. I don't want people coming around to see where the body was buried. The babies wouldn't like that. People might not let their kids come over to play with Robbie and Sarah.
Tara looked at her husband in surprise. I didn't think about that, JB.
Sookie, since your house is right by the cemetery, can you and Sam...
This isn't a usual best friend's job, I said, maybe a little tartly.
But okay, I'll do it.
You got an old sheet? She vanished into the house and came back with a white percale double-fitted. Kiana laid it out by the grave, and Sam and JB disinterred the bones. Wearing rubber dishwashing gloves, they transferred the remains of poor Carter Summerlin to the sheet. The ground was so shadowed by the side of the house, I needed the help of a flashlight to sift the earth, searching for anything they might have missed. I came up with two teeth and a few little finger bones. After a while, we were reasonably sure the entire skeleton had been harvested from the soil. Tara put the hammer on top of the bones, gathered up the sheet corners, and tied them in knots. There was a pause when Sam picked up the grotesque bundle.
Oh, all right, we'll go too,
Tara said angrily, as though I'd accused her of being callous. There was a little car caravan out to my house. Me, Sam in his pickup, JB and Tara and the twins in their car, and Kiana in her old Ford. We tromped through my woods to the cemetery. The dark was closing in around us when we came to my family plot. I was going to be late for work, but somehow I didn't think Sam would dock my pay for it. The space at the back of my family headstone was unusually large, and since it lay at the edge of the graveyard, there wasn't another family plot abutting it from the north. We took turns digging, again, by the light of the lantern-sized flashlights I'd snatched from my tool shed. JB lowered the bundle of bones and hammer into the makeshift grave. We shoveled the dirt back in, a much quicker job, and the men stamped down the new patch with their boots so it wouldn't look so raw. Maybe I'd come back tomorrow and stick a potted plant in the dirt to kind of explain the digging. When that was done, there was an odd moment when the night around us seemed to catch its breath. Her dark head bowed, Kiana said,
"The Lord is my shepherd.
And we all joined in. God bless this poor soul and send him on his way, I said when the prayer was finished. Then the night exhaled, and the air was empty. We trudged back to my house in silence, Kiana stumbling with exhaustion from time to time. There was an awkward pause as everyone tried to figure out how to cap off the experience. Finally, JB said,
"Y'all gonna come help finish the closet tomorrow?"
I laughed. I couldn't help it.
"Sure," Sam said. "We'll be there. And we'll finish."
And tomorrow, it would just be us in the house. Us living people.